And with the help of the magic wand, I'm sure we'll find a way. We're talking The Monsters Christmas. Hit it. It was 1981. The space shuttle Columbia was successfully launched. Pope John Paul II was shot. Raiders of the Lost Ark made its theatrical debut. And a little girl went on a quest to get some monsters' voices back. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. And joining me is a very special guest. You'll know him as one of the hosts of the Way Tubular, the 80 to 89 podcast, Matt Lappy. Matt, how's it going?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Jerry?
You know, I'm all right. I'm finally out of quarantine, so it's really nice.
Nice. It is a weird time we're having now, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And then I ended up, you know, I was like the most careful. I had always wore my masks, gloves, washed my hands like a million times a day, hand sanitizer, and I still ended up getting it. And so for the last, I don't know how many days, I've been kind of locked away in my own little room, which has been, you know, kind of a blessing as well, because I've been able to catch up on some way cool shows. But also, you know, I kind of missed my family. So it was nice to finally get out and and be free and see the world. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, I don't know how I didn't get it. I have a lowered immune system anyway, and I work in the medical field.
Oh, and wow.
Well, not like actually in the medical field, but I do like the billing and payment posting and that kind of stuff. But anyway, I work in this big office, and like 6 or 7 people got it, and I'm like right there next to them. But somehow I didn't. So
Christmas magic, I think.
Christmas magic, yes.
So you actually brought up this topic to me. Tonight we're talking about The Monsters Christmas from 1981.
Yes,
and
yes.
This is one that I had never heard of. It's a little film from New Zealand. You know, it's more of a TV special than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's kind of bananas, but I love it. What are your general thoughts, or what's your history with it, I guess?
Well, I remember watching it when I was a kid on HBO, where we saw a lot of the things that we watched in the 80s that saw over and over and over again.
It's true, yeah.
But I remember watching it Christmas morning, probably in, I don't know, maybe 1983 or something like that. And it just kind of stuck with me. And for the longest time, I'd forgotten about it. And then it just kind of came back into my mind again. And I don't know why. But so I started looking for it and found there was a DVD release. And so I bought it, got it off of eBay, I believe, and watched it. And it was absolutely nothing like I remembered, but it was still good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, I'm a huge fan of like Rankin Bass and those, you know, that whole style. And I feel like if they had done a live action, because they did a few live action movies, but if they had done like live action like in the 50s or something, right. I feel like that's what this reminds me of.
Well, see, I remembered it being more of like, I grew up watching like the Japanese big monster TV shows.
Yeah.
There were two in particular that I watched. One was called Spectre Man and one was called Space Giants.
Okay.
And they had big like monsters. And in my mind, that's what I remembered. But after seeing this, they kind of remind me more of HR Puffin Stuff Rejects.
Yeah. Yes. It's kind of like the monsters that you would see on like Power Rangers or something.
Yes.
Like that. You know,
yes, exactly.
It's that quality. It's not, it's nowhere near like the Akira Toriyama stuff.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, I imagine when I saw it, I thought, okay, maybe it'll be like some Godzilla kind of things, but no, they were really odd designs, and I kind of dug them. I mean, I really did.
Yeah.
but at the same time, they were just, they were very odd.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, it's something that, that I'm glad to have seen, and I'm glad you introduced me. And so I'm ready to like spread it, because it's, I think everyone needs to see this. It's,
oh, I agree. Absolutely.
There's
absolutely.
Like, there really is like a charm to it that I didn't expect. Honestly,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you hear Monsters Christmas, and I mean, when I first heard the title, before I knew anything about it, my first thought was like a troll in Central Park or whatever that movie was, you know, that kind of animated style. But then as it started, you know, and I soon realized it was going to be live action, it really kind of took me to a different place. So I think everyone needs to see it for real. And I'm just glad that I got the opportunity. So again, thank you.
No problem. Well, I was doing a little research on it, and there's not much out there on it.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty sparse.
Yeah, but basically they made it to kind of showcase New Zealand's beautiful spots.
Nice.
And there is some beautiful landscape there.
There really is. I loved that whole rock face on their way down to like the witch's lair. And, you know, we'll get into it later, but,
yeah.
But that way I loved that. That was like really cool. It almost seemed like from another world, honestly.
Yeah,
like I could see Star Trek or Star Wars or something filming in that location.
Oh, absolutely.
The forests were gorgeous, I thought. Same thing with the mountain, you know, quote unquote mountains. I thought those were just
the witch's cave and the stalactites.
The stalactites and stalagmites. Yeah. It was really just phenomenal. I mean,
yes.
I can see why like Peter Jackson, you know, filmed over there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's nowhere near that level of, you know, of cinematography, but at the same time, you can see like the hints of just beautiful landscapes. So
it
makes sense. I mean, I know it was done by the Gibson Group, which was started by Dave Gibson, and he later on went on to do a bunch of shows, and I think he was even chair of like the New Zealand film board for a while, which I thought was kind of cool. But it's just it's one of those groups that specifically produces a ton, like just a variety of stuff, especially in New Zealand, to the point where I don't even think I'd ever heard of them before.
No, I hadn't.
Yeah, they're not very international.
And the only person who's really done too much as far as acting is the witch, and it was all New Zealand stuff I had never heard of before. So
yeah, I do know that the little girl ended up coming back. Lucy McGrath, she ended up doing another one by the same director, another Christmas movie, and it was by the same group, and it was like 2 years later, 1983. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So if you ever want to come back on the show, I'm already inviting you back. We can cover that one later on. It's
All right.
Something about like Santa Claus and his elves have to like fix the workshop because it breaks down or something. But I don't know.
That seems interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure we probably can find it somewhere on YouTube or something.
Sure.
Oh man, but I guess we can get into it.
All right.
I mean, essentially, like if you want to just nutshell it, which I like to do, a little girl has a book and learns of the story of how a witch stole monsters' voices after a singing competition that she lost. And she's visited, I suppose, by a monster and ends up going on a quest to get him back.
That's right.
So that's like the nutshell version.
Yes.
But I mean, it's a lot weirder than that as well. And
it's
enjoyed, I mean, before we even get into it, I really enjoyed the designs of the monsters.
Yes. Yes. I thought the forest monster.
Yes.
How they did that was very interesting.
Yeah. Cause I mean, he's in the suit, but isn't he just walking backwards?
He's walking backwards. Yes.
It's so
to
cool.
Make him look insect-like.
And it worked. I mean, I bought it. I believed it for a while.
Yeah. Yes. But then if you notice in some parts, he's going forward.
Forwards, so, yeah. I think on that scene I was talking about, the rock face, he was going forward, which makes sense. I think you'd want your performer to be able to see where he's going on a steep slope.
But it was kind of amazing that he was carrying the girl walking backwards too on some of that.
Yeah. I mean, it was really interesting. Of course, they had the mud monster.
Yes.
Which, if I didn't know at first that it was a mud monster, if they hadn't said it, I probably wouldn't have guessed that it was supposed to be a mud monster. And that was one of those two-person costume type deals, you know, like the horse or whatever. But Again, I thought, you know, you could see their faces. I thought it was really neat design. Mm-hmm. But I think the creature that I really liked most of all was the one, the Nasty, I think is what he's called.
Oh, the one that looked like a naked rat mole?
The henchman?
Yeah.
The henchman, yeah. Yeah, I think officially he's credited as the Nasty or Nasty, something like that, which is like strange. I don't know if that's a New Zealand thing or what. But yeah. But he reminded me of that alien from Star Wars, the one that kind of rats him out. You know, he's got the hood.
Okay, yes.
The little communicator. Mm-hmm. You know, if he were not wearing that cloak at all.
Right.
You know, if he had a tail. And then I think he also had like bat wings kind of between webbing, I suppose, between mm-hmm. his arm and his body.
Yep. Had some whiskers on his nose.
That's right. Yeah. And he had the long fingers with the long nails.
And he was quite the acrobat.
He was. He did several somersaults and cartwheels and things.
That's right.
Which is super cool.
Yes.
But I enjoyed his design. I thought his design was like the greatest out of all of them.
I thought so too. Yeah.
And I think if I had been little, I think that one probably would have scared me. Like, honestly, I think I would have been super scared out of that. But
yeah.
I think production value, of course, you can tell that it's not a huge budget kind of a thing, but I think with what they did, you know, with what they had, they did pretty good.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there were some interesting and unexplained wardrobe changes. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes. I mean, randomly the girl was just doing something and then all of a sudden there was this and all of a sudden there was that. And even the witch, I think too.
Yeah. Well, there was one scene where the girl, she's in her nightgown and all of a sudden she's in a nurse's outfit.
Yes. I thought that was just me. Well, I think later on she even like balls it up and she's like carrying it. And then I think the mountain monster has it or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, because the Nasty attacks her and tears off all her clothes, evidently. And
yeah. it's strange. Yeah.
It is.
I was reading on this one site, and someone was commenting, and he just said that it makes less sense the more you watch it.
Yes.
I thought that was a great way to put it. But I guess we could get into the plot.
Okay.
So the girl, who's never quite named, I think she's just credited even as just the girl. Mm-hmm. Cute little girl. I thought she did a great job for being, you know, the one of two speaking roles, you know.
And she was very ballsy.
She really was, yeah. I dug that.
I did too.
I was like, man, I hope my daughter can be that, you know, that brave and powerful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it starts off with like this really creepy intro, you know, and the scene is set and it's like someone is kind of stalking outside or you know, like creeping, and he's just, you know, coming to a window, and through the window you can hear her reading this book, and it's the story essentially of how the monsters lost their voices.
Right.
And
right.
So apparently they lost to the witch, a witch who joined the singing competition. They love to sing Christmas carols, and they, I guess, were amazing and she was not.
Right. So then Festaduke, who is the witch, she took away their voices.
Festaduke.
So that she would Festaduke, yes.
Sorry, I think she even comments on the awfulness of the name.
She did, and I had to listen to that about four times to get her name was Festaduke, but yes, it is Festaduke. But yeah, she takes away the monster's voices so that she is the only one who can sing and make beautiful music.
Which apparently she was terrible. So it's not like she was really making beautiful music, but
right.
But
right.
I guess, well, if you're a witch, you know, and you have that power, might as well do that.
That's right.
So I kept trying to hear what her name was, and I never got it at all. Like, So I'm glad you brought that up, because I could never figure that out.
Yeah.
Festaduke. Okay.
Festaduke, yes. Well, then the little girl, she falls asleep while she's reading the story, right? Mm-hmm. And she hears a noise.
Oh, that's right.
She runs out and she goes, Father Christmas. Father Christmas is here. So she goes out there and the monster's there, the mountain monster.
Yeah.
Now, the mountain monster, he's got one eye. He's got a big thing on his head, like an anglerfish, you know, mm-hmm. the little thing. And then he has like a volcano top on the top of his head that spews
Yeah, it's like smoke. And,
yeah, yeah. And then I don't know if you noticed, but his stomach lit up.
I did notice that. Yeah, I thought that was a cool touch because I guess if he's going to be volcanic, you know, right. or mountainous, you know, it makes sense since, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thermal activity and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, I thought that was a really cool touch.
I thought so too. But then if I walked into that room and saw that creature, as odd as it looked, I would freak out.
Yeah.
But the little girl, she just goes, "You're not Father Christmas. I know what you are. You're a monster. And you're scare me because you don't have a voice."
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, "What?"
That makes no sense. You know who else doesn't have a voice? A tiger.
That's right.
And it can kill you. but yeah, she was like ridiculously brave, but I mean, I guess it must have looked similar to her book.
Well, it did, yes, because it was the exact monsters that were in the book.
Yeah, so you know, she sees it and she's like, "Oh, I guess they're not scary. They must sing Christmas carols, so I guess they're, you know, they must be good guys, you know."
I guess.
But yeah, I did think that was pretty funny. The Father Christmas, and then, you're a monster.
You're a monster. So then the monster starts playing. He starts playing charades. Yeah.
Yes.
I lose words sometimes. Forgive me.
No worries. I do that all the time. But he grabs the poker, doesn't he?
Like, exactly. And so she's trying to figure it out, and then he puts a star on top of it, and she goes, "Oh, it's a wand! It's a wand!" And so he convinces her to go with him on this journey, and she goes, "Well, the only thing I need is I need to be back before Christmas."
Yeah. He never tells her how far it's going to be.
Or how they're going to get there.
Exactly. He could at least carry her, right? But I love when they're playing the charades because she's like, "It's a sword."
That's right. "I know. It's a baton like a policeman has."
Yeah. Just her guesses are, they're just so, I mean, so cute.
Yes.
But she really was. She was just, you know, a little adorable, you know, kid that I thought, like you said, she was super brave and ballsy. But also, I mean, she had a charm. I mean, she really did. There was something about her that it made me want to watch, and it made me want to root for her. Which, well, you know, a lot of child actors, I mean, I hate to say it, but they're kind of pretty annoying.
Yes.
And I mean, she had her moments, but I think overall, I quite enjoyed it.
And I think the reason she was ballsy, in my opinion, is because I don't think she had any parents. She just lived in that big house all by herself.
She must have, because no one said anything.
No, not at all.
There was no one. She was just reading all by herself.
That's right.
No one tucked her in. I mean, the parents didn't get up when they heard the noise.
No. And even spoiler, towards the end, she was opening up gifts all by herself.
Yeah. Man, if I did that, I mean, my parents would have walloped me. No, we have to wait for the family.
Yeah. That's right. We had to wait for all of the family to wake up.
Yep, so did we. Yep. Now, I was lucky. I just had two brothers, but I mean, we couldn't do anything until mom and dad at least were up. So I'd be up at like, and I know I'm kind of going on a tangent, but I'd get up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, and then I'd wake my brothers up, and we, you know, after kind of just staring at everything for a while, then we'd go wake mom and dad up immediately. So I mean, we kind of were at it. So when she thought it was Father Christmas, I figured, you know, she'd watch her stuff and then maybe go wake up mom and dad, but no.
Right.
Yeah.
We were the same way growing up though, too. When we'd get up, we'd go over to my grandparents and I'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Nice. And I have a brother and a sister, and I'd go down and I'd get my stocking and I'd open it up and then put it back. Then I'd go upstairs, wake up my sister. Then we'd go down and look through our stockings again, and then get my brother's stocking and look through his. And then we'd put it all back, and then we'd go up back stairs and wake up my brother.
Nice.
And then go back down and look at everything again.
A couple extra things here.
That's right. And then go back upstairs, watch cartoons for a little bit, and then wake everybody up, wait for the coffee to be made, and then we finally get to go downstairs.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we only had one story, so it was pretty much a quick run to my room. And then a quick run to my brother's room. And then my parents' room was right across from theirs. So as soon as I'd wake them up, you know, we'd kind of run, and we just, I mean, literally just kind of stare. The tree would be on. Mm-hmm. no, all the lights were off except the tree. And of course we had our stuff in piles already. Right. And then, yeah, we'd all just run to mom and dad and of course like, wake up, it's Christmas. And so, yeah, surprising that she wasn't anything like that, but I think you're right. She must have lived all alone in that cabin.
Must have.
So she starts going on this quest and, we get our first like song, I think.
Yes.
Which I don't know. I mean, as songs go, to me, it wasn't very memorable.
No.
But I do like, and I kind of opened up the show with it, you know, where she's talking about, you know, getting the magic wand and we'll save the day. I mean, she pretty much is just saying everything that's going to happen.
Right, right.
Which is nice. She's just narrating it all.
And it's all done to Calliope music.
Yes, it is. Which was another strange choice. And I think that adds to like just the weirdness of it all.
It does, yes.
But it was, and you know, it wasn't like just straight Calliope. It was almost like a synth. Mm-hmm. Calliope to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it had like that edge that almost seemed a little electronic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, you know, they probably just had some sort of keyboard, you know, maybe, you know, some sort of Moog or Rhodes or something, and just plugged it in and went from there. But I kind of enjoyed that too.
Yeah. It fit is what it did.
It definitely fit. Yeah. It definitely, I mean, it was out there. And so, but I do love how randomly you'd get little Christmas carols here and there. So, you know, in that opening scene, when we were talking about, you know, the monsters kind of coming closer to the window, they're playing Silent Night on that synth Calliope or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And of course, Silent Night becomes, you know, really relevant later on. But
it does, yes.
You know, at the time, it kind of sets the mood, but also is very strange.
Mm-hmm.
But then that same instrumental, or instrumentation, excuse me, is used later on, like you mentioned in that song, and it just kind of ties it together, but not completely, because melodically and harmonically, it's very different from Silent Night.
Right, it is, yes. But yeah, as you said, they walk across walking across, and she's singing the song about how she has to get the voices back, and it's really up to her. And it goes on for a while, and then you notice you see your first glimpse of the Nasty.
Yes.
And he starts following the mountain monster and the little girl.
Yeah.
Into the mountain.
Yes, which I thought was kind of cool. I mean, I don't know how the mountain monster knew where the wand was, or if he had the wand hidden away, or
well, it showed in the book that he hid it there.
Okay, so yeah, I missed that part, so I don't remember that, but yeah, so he had it, and he shows her, but it is in like a cave, and as they're going in, it reminded me really strongly of Krull, when Corwin has to like go into the cave and to find the glaive, you know, and of course he has to stick his hand in the lava or whatever, but I really got that same vibe, because again, you had like the glowing, you know, it's supposed to be that geothermal energy or, you know, whatever lava or something. And I love how, you know, he kind of leads her to the stalagmite, but it's hollow because she just pops the top off and pulls out the wand.
It's hollow and it has hinges so they can open up.
Like any stalagmite does. Yeah.
That's right.
But she pulls the wand out, and the wand is actually kind of cool looking. I mean, later on when it breaks, you can see as they do a close-up of the orb on top, it's pretty cheap looking. But when she first pulls it out, you know, in that light, I actually thought it looked really well done.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool too. It's only later when you are disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. But they pull it out, and it's a wand with like a big orb, I'd say maybe the size of a baseball, maybe a tiny bit bigger, but it's around there. And it's, of course, all glittery and silvery, and so in that reddish hue, I mean, it really shone, and I dug that a lot.
Yeah,
but well, so and step one complete.
and during this whole time, she's in her nightgown.
Right.
Scene change. Suddenly, she's in a nurse's outfit, and they're sitting outside the mountain, and she reaches down onto the ground and picks up something. And says, "I'm hungry. Would you like some chocolate?"
Some chocolate, yeah. Yeah, now, I you know, when you're traveling on a quest, you got to take some chocolate, man.
Right, right. But we discover something very interesting in this part of the show, that monsters only eat pictures.
Yes. Which again was something that, I mean, she was a very clever girl because she figured that out.
Yes.
Fairly quickly. Because I would have thought when he was pointing to it, I would have thought, okay, first, you know, he eats flowers. But then mm-hmm. she, you know, he grabs it and it's like, oh, okay, he eats paper. I would have said paper.
Yeah.
But no, she knows it's pictures somehow.
Right.
So not yep. only is she brave, but she's pretty smart too.
She is. She is. She's got a head on her shoulders there.
But she gets upset, which I thought was a funny touch because it was one of her Christmas books. You know,
it was
one of her gifts. Yeah, and he just literally ripped out a page and ate it. And mm-hmm. So she's like, no, you're not going to take this anymore. But while all this is going on, the nasty kind of sees that she's got the wand and he's, you know, like, uh-oh, something's up. Cause he's basically the henchman to the evil witch.
Right. Right. And whilst she's drawing, he's trying to reach around the monster and the mountain monster and grab the wand, but the mountain monster feels it and just starts itching himself, you know, thinking he's got an itch there. And then this happens a couple times. And then suddenly the mountain monster turns around and sees the nasty and he takes the wand and goes, woo, woo, woo. And this ball of light hits the monster and he jumps up. And then the mountain monster gives the wand to the little girl and she swings it around and aims it at the nasty and it blows off his tail.
It blows off his tail. Yeah.
It does. Like, yes.
She has pretty good aim, but I mean, hopefully he didn't need that for anything.
I hope not. He was very upset about it later when he was talking to the witch.
Yes, that's it. So, but my first thought was like, man, I hope he was not like a monkey or something that kind of right. did that, you know. But yeah, she literally just blasts his tail off.
And, yes.
And of course he runs away, but still it doesn't deter him later on. He still has to try his best to get that tail or to get that wand, I mean.
That's right. That's right.
And but yeah, so all that happens, and by the way, my mistake, she actually, I forgot to mention that she does try to draw pictures for him.
Yes, she does.
To eat, because she doesn't want him ripping pages out. So I forgot that part, but yeah, I thought that was kind of cool too, although I also wondered where she got like the, you know, the pen and paper or the crayons and all that.
Well, I don't know if you noticed this, but the second time I watched it, mm-hmm. For this show, I noticed she's carrying around her stocking with her.
Oh no, I did not notice that.
She has her Christmas stocking, and some of the times she has the wand stuck in it with it. So she reaches in there to get it. So I'm wondering if maybe that's where she got the chocolate instead of off the ground.
Oh yeah, probably makes sense.
But if you look, it looked like she's just pulling it off the ground and go, oh, chocolate, ground chocolate, yum.
Oh man. Yeah, it's strange. It you know, it's there's a lot of little details that I didn't notice. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a few that I did, but that was one that just completely passed me by. But that means that she, I mean, because how would she have her stocking if Father Christmas hadn't come yet? Or yeah. Maybe he did, and
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know, but either way, yeah, that does make a lot more sense than
ground chocolate.
Chocolate from the ground. Unless you're in a video game, in which case that makes perfect sense. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Well, then shortly after she blows off the nasty's tail, the mountain monster's done with her. He's just like, go.
Yeah,
she's like, will you come with me? And he's like, no, can't. He doesn't say that because he doesn't have a voice.
Because he doesn't have a voice, yeah. Although they can still kind of vocalize.
They do vocalize a little bit, yes.
Yeah, I did notice that. You know, there was several grunts and growls. And mm-hmm. So I guess not having a voice means they just can't speak.
Right, right.
Or sing. Yeah.
But so then she goes off walking, mm-hmm. and we come to the forest. And yes. She's walking through the forest, and then you see the nasty again.
Yes.
And all of a sudden she hears something, and something picks her up, and it's running with her. And then it just throws her on the ground, and she looks up and goes, I want to become a monster too.
Yeah. 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 It's just funny, but I, this is where we get that really cool insect monster or forest monster.
Yes. Yes.
And again, it's really well done. I mean, it was a cool idea that they tried to figure out, you know, a way to make it more insectoid, mm-hmm. and just by having him wear the suit backwards. So essentially the face is on, you know, the back of his head, mm-hmm. What's it called? The exoskeleton whatever is on his front, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's just walking backwards. But because of that, it's very insectoid because his knees, you know, are now bent the other way, like an insect.
Exactly.
And he's able to, when he lifts his hands up, again, it kind of looks like an insect would, you know, with mm-hmm. their, I don't know what they're called, but with their legs, I guess.
Right, right.
So it was cool, and I thought the costume designer did a pretty good job there. But we see like webs and stuff all over mm-hmm, as well, mm-hmm. and at the insect monster is, I mean, he's kind of, I don't want to say mean to her, but he's like going to be, I guess, aggressive until she says that she's there to like help.
Right, right.
And, yeah.
well, like I said, he just picks her, and I think it's a woman. I think it's a woman monster, the forest monster, because when they're singing later, there's a
it's
woman's
like a soprano,
voice.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And the noises that this creature makes are also higher. Like the mountain monster was like, and this one had a higher timber to it, so mm-hmm.
yeah.
So I think it was that, but I mean, it just throws her to the ground, and we see the little girl, and her eyes are closed. And then she just opens them up, and like I said, she says, "I want to be a monster too." and then the forest monster provides her with yet another
costume change. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Somehow, and I mean, I don't know where he got this. I mean, because it is almost insectoid as well. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if it was like the corpse of like his...
it could have been, yes.
like his young or something, you know, how some insects eat their young or mates and things like that. Maybe it was his mate or her mate. But yeah, I mean, it's very insectoid, but it's like a monster costume.
Right,
and
right.
So she, you know, it's got holes in the front for her to stick her hands out, and then her head kind of goes through. But it's like she's essentially in like a shell kind of
right. thing. It almost looks like a ladybug shell, except it has like has spikes on it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I thought they were very like web like, but as if it was hardened into spikes or something. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminded me the color and like the texture, at least when I saw it, kind of made me think of like its webs, its webbing that was all over the place too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I mean, it was kind of neat, but again, I got to wonder like where'd he get it?
right.
And that's did all the monsters kind of get together? Cause he had that ready for her.
Well, yeah. It was all set to go.
Yeah. It's like the monsters got together and talked like, "Hey, I think it's time to get our voices back. I'm gonna go get this girl." You know, you have a costume ready, but of course they'd have to be miming all that because they can't talk.
Well, then the nasty shows up again.
Yes,
and the spider monster, the insect, the forest monster, webs them all up.
Yes,
and then basically, the forest monster says, "Okay, go."
Yeah,
hey, little girl, I gave you a costume. Go now.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like with the mountain monster. It's almost you get the feeling like they can't go past their environment or something.
Exactly.
You know, like beyond the borders of our land or something. But but later on they do, so I guess that's not the case.
Right. Maybe there just needs to be a good reason for them to cross into the other border.
Yeah, exactly. It's like turf wars, you know.
Right.
You know.
So the little girl goes walking off some more, and then she looks behind, and there's the nasty again chasing
right her.
So she's running as fast as she can in that costume, you know, and she comes up to a cliff, and she has nowhere to go. And the nasty's right behind her, and then he like jumps at her and jumps over her and down the cliff and into the water.
Yeah, because it's not like she really like moves out of the way or anything. He just literally over jumps.
Yep.
He falls into the water, which I thought was great.
He falls into the water and he looks up and the little girl's there and she waves and then walks off.
It's so good. Man, but it did make me feel sad for the actor a bit, because you know, I mean, that costume.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it had to be maybe not super heavy, but uncomfortable.
And right.
To have it being soaking wet as well, I thought, oh man, this guy's. I mean, that's brutal for this guy.
Well, hopefully that was one of the last scenes for him. So
yeah, I hope so. Yeah, exactly.
So then she enters a new landscape, and you see bubbling water, fog, gurgling mud.
Yeah.
And she walks by this, well, it looks like a stalagmite out there, like a couple mud piles, maybe, you know? Mm-hmm. And out of the top of them, these two heads pop up. And she turns around, and they pop their heads back into the top of the mud pile. And so she starts walking off, and they start following her. But she can't see them because there's all the fog.
There's all the fog, yeah.
So she finally stops, and she's standing there. And then one of the mud monsters grabs her wand, and they play tug of war with it for a little bit. And then the girl just kind of says, "Don't you want me to help you?" And the guy's like, answer the wand back.
I guess that's all you need to say. Everybody wants help. But we get this really cool bit. I think this is like my favorite part here, where they kind of go to the mud, and somehow, I guess because they're the mud monster, or you know, they help her learn the magic word. And as the bubbles are forming in the mud, so I don't know if it's because of heat or if because it's something they're doing or whatever, but it kind of vocalizes, like the gas that's coming up kind of vocalizes
it does, yes,
words. And it was a little hard to hear, but essentially they teach her like the magic word, or they teach her how to figure it out.
Right. And I don't know how she got that from what the bubbles said, because what the bubbles say is the magic word is like hello, a noisy greeting from below. And somehow from that, she took the words hello
and below
and below and vocalized it together a little bit and changed it and figured out that the magic word was hullabaloo.
Yep.
It's kind of a stretch, but you know,
she was telling smart. You, man. She's a really smart girl. Yeah,
she's very smart. Yeah,
because I never would have gotten it. Me as a kid, especially that age, if they said it's like hello, I probably would have started riffing off like hi. Well, yeah, hi is like hello, so something with hi, you know?
Right. Well, and just her being able to understand from what the bubbles were saying, because it wasn't like it saying the magic word. It was like,
that's super good. Yeah,
it was just really like that. Now, one part that happened before this that I thought was interesting was she was going to feed the mud monster. And so she was drawing a picture for them, and she wanted to know how many legs and how many eyes they wanted. And they had to figure that out.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But the one of the heads of the mud monster vocalized very well. Mm-hmm. And he kind of sounded like the mud when it was talking, but he just kind of goes, and I love that.
Well, that, I mean, it was a really cool part, because I guess they figure out, you know, 15 or whatever legs.
Right, 15 legs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so she draws it, and I thought, oh, that's pretty good. I mean, it was really like, I mean, I'm assuming she drew it herself, because it really was like what a girl, mm-hmm. right? Like that's, I mean, it's like what my daughter draws, you know, she's 8 years
right,
old.
Right.
So it's really similar. So I thought, okay, well, that's really authentic there. So I dug that part too. But it was very funny to see the, you know, the two monsters, the two heads. You kind of get that classic bit of the two heads don't really agree until
right. And then they fight over the picture because the one cuts it in half and gives the other one the little piece, and so the one goes, I want that other piece. So she crunches it up and then switches it, but gives him still the little piece, and he's all happy with it then. But then after she finds out the magic word of hullabaloo, they start talking through the mud again on how to find it.
How to find it, yeah.
And again, it's broken up, and she figures it out. And what they say is, above the horse and deep inside, behind the teeth, the voices hide.
And she remembers that exactly after only hearing it once.
Once, yes.
I would not have remembered that at all. I mean, now I'm, you know, 40 years old and I definitely can't, but I mean, even at like, you know, when I was at the height of, you know, I was taking physics classes in college and stuff. I wouldn't have been able to remember that after just hearing it once. Mm-hmm, so,
Well, especially with all that happens to her between now and then.
Yes. Yeah. Because she, after she leaves, she is, before we even do that, let's mention that she's gifted by the mud monsters.
Yes.
a helmet or mask kind of piece to go with her costume.
yep. So, and when, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so it kind of reinforces, at least in my mind, my theory that all the monsters were working together to get this done.
Well, and she hurt the mud monster's feelings. Did you see that? They had that helmet for her, that hat, and she goes, yuck. And they were like, yeah. She goes, no, like, yuck, good.
Yeah. And she puts it on, and so it's kind of like it's like a helmet kind of thing, almost like a biking helmet, but again with you know, little designs and spikes and stuff,
right?
But so you can still see her face, which is why I thought it was odd later on when the witch sees her and just assumes she's a monster, even though she's clearly looking at a human face.
Right. Well, maybe she hadn't seen a human in a while.
That's true. She'd only seen that witch from her video, I guess.
That's right. But speaking of the witch, this is about the first time we get to actually see the witch. Mm-hmm. Because after this happened, well, the mud monsters again send the little girl on her way all by herself. But they do give her a nice little salute as they're going.
Yes.
So she starts walking off, and we scene change to a cave. And this witch has it all decked out with exercise equipment.
Which is like so 80s, right? Yes, you think very like 80s. Especially the early 80s, you know, early to mid 80s. And it's like all about, you know, jazzercising and aerobics.
Exactly.
And just, you know, spas. And I mean, even Death Spa, you think of that movie. But, you know, it's just, it's so typical 80s.
Well, she even had one of those. The first time I saw this was in like a, It was probably either a Little Rascals or a Three Stooges, but it's one of those boxes that you get in, and it's kind of like a sauna. It's supposed to make you sweat. But she had one of those in there, and so she's exercising, and she's watching this other witch on the TV, and she's got this beehive hairdo that looks like a witch's hat without the brim.
Yes, it's shaped exactly as if like you just put the hat on and she's got hat hair, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
it's a weird choice, but I kind of dug it also. It added to her strangeness.
Right. But as the girl's going up the mountain, wherever she's headed to, the nasty follows her, and she sees him, and she starts running, and she gets to this big bush.
It's like a bush, yeah.
Yeah, and the nasty jumps on her, and then all of a sudden you see these clothes and all this stuff go flying out of the bush, and then the nasty comes out, and he's got the wand, and he takes off. Now this is what I thought was really cool. So the girl gets up, and she's in all of her regalia, you know, but she doesn't have the wand anymore. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden she's on a cliff edge again, and she goes, no,
and it just reverberates throughout the land, and all the monsters hear, and they're all ready to go to battle now.
Yes.
I thought that was great. They're called to arms. The little girl, save her.
I'm just surprised that like her echo carried that. Yes. Her voice just, I mean, how could it get all the way back? I mean, it was only like, what, a day or two, I guess?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know how far she actually walked, but.
Well, it couldn't have been a day or two because it was Christmas Eve. Because
it was Christmas Eve and then Christmas the next. Yeah. So, man, how.
I don't know the time. But maybe they're in a different land with a different time. Maybe it goes slower. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. But or they did the whole Scrooge thing and all of a sudden it was back to, you know, because yeah, in the novel, right. You know, they're visited like on consecutive nights, you know, 1 right. p.m. on different nights. But then all mm-hmm. of a sudden it's Christmas morning.
Right.
Maybe
right.
that happened. I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, her voice, I mean, it carried to where even the mountain monster heard. Yep. And so he... It was like, all right, I got to go help my bud.
That's right. And they all start taking off.
They all start taking off. Yep. Well, then, this is where we also notice that the orb on the wand has fallen, is broken off. It's on the ground now.
Yep. Yep.
And that's where I first noticed that it wasn't quite as impressive as it looked in the cave.
Right. Right. Well, you know, the nasty, his whole job was to find the wand for the witch. Mm-hmm. And he finally found it. So he took it to the witch and she's so excited. And here is where we get our second song.
Yes.
This is where the witch, all she sings is, give it to me, give it to me, yeah. give it to me, give it to me, give it to me. And they're dancing around.
Yeah, it's more it's more just a rhythm, you know, rather than yeah, anything yeah. else. It's, there's really no melody to it, but it's kind of catchy. It is, I liked it better than the first song, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I find myself singing it. Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me, give it to me, give it to me. Give it to me. But then you know, the nasty takes it and he's keeping it away from her. And then,
yeah, he's playing keep away, like from yeah, his boss. Yeah. I mean, right. to me, that just seems strange, but...
But then to get away from the boss, he gets on the exercise bike and starts pedaling it like he's going to go somewhere.
Well, you know, I mean, he's still just a nasty. He's not the, he's no, yeah, you know, he's true. No little girl, I guess. But
yeah, he's no little girl.
But she gets it and notices that it's missing the orb.
Right. And she tries to do a spell on the nasty and it yeah, doesn't work.
And it doesn't work. And so she realizes something's wrong and she's like, go find it. And
right.
So exactly. She puts it in, I mean, I don't know what it is, just a little pouch or something. I couldn't tell what it was.
I assuming it was a witch purse. I don't know.
I like that witch purse. Yeah. But so
the nasty goes out mm-hmm. and he's looking and the little girl is evidently hiding behind a rock right next to the opening of the cave where the witch lives. Mm-hmm. And she walks in, just walks in, starts looking around. And she's looking around at things. And the witch is sneaking around behind her.
Yeah, she knows someone's in her lair and it's kind of stalks her a bit. There.
Right. And while she's sneaking around there, we get another scene where the monsters have finally all met up. And they kind of get in that huddle like they do in football, you know, where they're just all sitting in there talking. And then they all break up and they start going up the hill because they're going to save this little girl now.
Mm-hmm.
And then back to the cave. Very interesting scene changes.
Yeah, they were pretty abrupt, I thought, but I yes. liked it. Yeah, I mean, it yeah. was good to see what was going on with the monsters, knowing that they mm-hmm. were already on their way. And
right, right. So the witch finally finds the little girl
mm-hmm.
and she thinks she's a monster. She's
a baby monster. It's like
a baby monster.
You must be a baby or something like that.
That's right. And so she goes, you know what monsters are good for?
Work.
Monsters are good for work.
And the list, I got to say, the list of chores that she wants her to do is like really long. And really, really detailed too, because she wants her, you know, she wants her, I mean, one of the last things she said, of course, was like to wax and scrub all the floors, but right. I mean, she has to polish all the equipment and she talks like, you know, she names each one, and then she wants the walls completely washed. And yep, I mean, it's just like she's going on and on. And I just thought, wow, you know, she really expects this baby monster to get it.
She does. But you know, I felt that she was very nice to the baby monster because she was going to feed her before she had to do all that work.
Yeah.
Did you notice that when she was drawing her picture on the stand that she was drawing, there was a whole bunch of pictures of muscle women?
I know. I didn't notice that. But I guess both sides there were... because when we see her, she's exercising.
Yes, yes.
Watching like a workout video of another witch trying to get in shape. So I right. think maybe that's like her goal. She's like trying to beef up. Well, I don't know.
And I think so because once, but only because she didn't have magic anymore. Because once the nasty came in with the wand, she goes, no more exercising.
I did notice her say that. Yeah.
So maybe she can just do a spell on herself so she doesn't need to exercise.
I guess so, yeah.
I could use one of those.
Oh, man. But as the girl is polishing, you know, some of the equipment, she gets to the it's one of those horses like from gymnastics.
Yeah, one of the exercise horses, yeah. Yeah.
And so she looks up and she notices, and there's this big ladder. I mean, just this long ladder that leads up to an opening in the cave with a lot of, you know, stalagmites.
Right.
Up. And again, the red. So you see it's, you know, you can tell we're definitely in a cave somewhere. There's all that lava or whatever it is. And so she starts reciting everything, you know, the poem that she, that really hard to hear poem she only heard once. She recites it perfectly.
Yep. She figures it out. She goes, yep. That's
got to be up
is.
There. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I mean, I got to say, it looked suspicious. Everything was just all exercise, except you look up and there's this one long ladder.
That's right.
Got to be something.
Meanwhile, we go back to the monsters and they're coming down the hill.
Yeah.
And they're running really fast. And at this point in time, the insect monster is running frontwards.
this is where we get, you can tell the costume is on regular now. The guy had to see where he was going,
but. Right, exactly. But that didn't stop the monsters from falling down the,
no, they still, yeah, the hill. They still did. they took a few stumbles here and there. Yeah,
they did. Sure. Yes,
I mean, it looked kind of steep to me. So
yeah, it looked really steep. Well, and it was very rocky.
And it was really rocky, yeah, like a lot of little rocks. And so you'd step and you could see them all just kind of fall down. Which again, I thought was perfect for, like, you know, Star Wars movie or something. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if it was because of the time of day they filmed or if it's just always kind of got that hue. I mean, I don't know, but I thought it was perfect for something like that. But yeah, see, they kind of stumble and fall and, but they're making their way. They're getting towards that cave.
They're getting closer. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we get back.
It's a good thing.
Oh, it is a good thing because we get back to the cave and the nasty has returned.
Yes.
And he realizes that it is not a baby monster, but the little girl inside the costume that he's been following this whole time. And he goes to frantically tell the witch.
And he tells the witch, she can talk.
Yes, which again, I had no idea how they figured these pantomimes out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed it. You know,
well, he made like a little mouth with his hands and did like that, you know, so they figured it out. So then, during this time, the witch is in that little box that's kind of like a sauna that I was talking about. So she gets out of it and the nasty's holding a towel up in front of her. So
yes, I did notice that. And he's, you know, frantically moving it as she's changing, you know,
right.
You know, she's not stationary. She's moving, and he's trying to his best to hide her.
So then the little girl's standing there, and the witch is going to go towards her, but the nasty stops her. He's like, I'm going to get her.
Yeah.
So he does some flips down this mat.
Yeah.
And then he stands at the end and is about to get the girl. And for some reason, which I don't understand.
I wasn't sure about this either, but the witch just pulls the mat out from under him
and makes
him fall. I don't get it. Unless, like, she wants the honor to get the girl. I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But he just falls to the ground. And then she's talking to the little girl, and she's getting closer and closer. And then the nasty looks up, and there they are, our monsters
the mountain monster, the forest monster, and the mud monster, and they start coming in, and evidently the nasty just faints. He just kind of puts his head down on the ground. Like, oh.
Or he plays dead or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, please don't hurt me.
Well, then the witch grabs the wand from the little girl because she took it out of the witch purse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's getting ready to hit the little girl or something. But then the mountain monster grabs the wand and puts the forest
orb
monster,
or whatever it is. Yeah.
Puts the orb back on top. And then the witch sees them and goes, oh, and just faints away.
A lot of fainting.
Faint. A very slow faint.
Yes.
It took her a long time to get to the ground.
She does. And she hits that mat. Because she does fall on the mat, but she does it very gingerly, too. Well, you know, there was no stunt people here, so.
That's right. Well, then for some reason, the whole scene goes dark.
Mm-hmm. And I imagined here it must have been a cut to a commercial or something, but there really weren't very many other commercial cuts, so maybe not.
Uh-uh. I don't know.
They just didn't know how to transition, and so they said, let's
maybe not.
Just hey, go black.
Yeah.
Turn it off, quick.
So then we see the girl climbing up the big ladder,
mm-hmm.
and she gets up to the very top.
Yeah, she's out of the costume.
She's got
now.
No fear.
She's in her just her nightgown again.
Yeah, which, not to sound creepy, but they should have had some pants on her.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Because
she's climbing
I
up, so it's almost like an upskirt
right.
kind of shot.
Yeah. So I kind of had to cover my eyes some. Yep. But she got up to the top, and she reaches inside and says the magic word.
Hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo. And it echoes and echoes and echoes. And then she steps down a couple of steps. And what does she do? She starts singing
Silent Night, which is a callback to that opening scene and that weird
That's
music.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then she sings a verse, and then the monsters kick in.
One at a time, yeah.
Beautiful and voices.
Yeah, I mean, great. There's a great tenor, and you're right. I think the insect was a girl because it's a soprano you can hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the others are nice baritones, and mm-hmm. I mean, they just... They're gorgeous. They're all like very well trained singers.
Like, yes,
you
know, yes.
Not just any old singer. It's really someone that was you could tell they had some training.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she gets down to the bottom of the ladder and she's conducting them. And then the witch wakes up.
Which I thought was funny. Does she really need to conduct them? I mean, they were already singing pretty well together.
Right,
but yeah, it was a good touch. Because I could see my daughter doing that too.
Yeah. Well, but then it was the Christmas moment where they let the witch sing with them. She said, the little girl was like, sing. So they all sang together.
Yeah. Well, you know, when there's no competition, I guess it all kind of, it's all good.
Yeah. It's all good. Yeah.
But yeah. It was nice. And I enjoyed that moment. It really was. That was a moment that kind of really got me because, you know, it was like, hey, I know you're an evil witch, but it's Christmas. Come, you know, come join with us. And
right.
Yeah, it was nice.
Mm-hmm. And then suddenly she wakes up in her bed.
In her bed, yeah.
So we don't know whether this was a dream or if it really happened.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes out into her big empty house all by herself and starts looking through her presents.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear the vocalization of Silent Night again. And all the monsters appear at her door. Creepily looking
window.
At her.
Yeah, they're creepily
looking
her,
at her. And then they walk away, and she looks at the door, and there's nobody there. And then as they're singing Silent Night, they walk into the sunrise or sunset. I don't know which it was.
I don't know which one it is, yeah.
And then the credits roll.
Mm-hmm. It was a cute little special. I mean, it was bonkers, but I kind of enjoyed it. I mean, I like Rankin Bass, so it makes sense that I'd like it.
Yeah.
This special was actually kind of cool. So it actually won the bronze medal at the 1981 New York International Film Festival.
Oh.
So I thought that was pretty neat for something that it was not really well known, at least not here in the States. I mean, I don't know how popular it was in New Zealand, but
right.
I mean, this was one that for sure had passed me by. And I do know quite a bit from the 80s, but I mean, this one, I had no idea this even existed.
Well, like I said, I had good memories of it. And I watched it all the time when I was a kid because, you know, HBO, they showed everything all the time.
All the time. They sure did. Yeah. They still do all the time.
Yeah. But I hadn't seen it in years and I was just so excited. And the music brought back memories, but the monsters look completely different than what I had in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, that's kind of how I was with the, I just did a Claymation Christmas celebration a couple of weeks ago. And it was one that I loved growing up. And then I had completely forgotten about it for years until about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And it was one that, you know, just all of a sudden one day I remembered, hey, there was this one with the bells that would hit themselves on the head. And, you know, so then that, of course, that prompted me to look it up. So it was kind of a similar experience where something that was such a part of your childhood, then all of a sudden, you know, you forget about because things happen. You start growing up and get into other stuff. Exactly. And then just all of a sudden, you know, this random memory for no reason just kind of pops up and makes you remember it.
Yep.
So I'm glad you remembered it because this was neat. It was like I said, and I've said this a few times, but it's kind of crazy, but I enjoyed it.
Yep. And I want more people to know about it because anybody I talk to has never heard about it.
Yeah.
My wife and my kid don't want to watch it.
Oh, man.
So then at Christmas time, I sit and watch it by myself.
Oh.
But that's okay. That's okay.
It is. I know there's a few things that I always have to watch by myself too, but yeah, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Well, we have the stuff we do watch. This is just one that doesn't resonate with them.
I can understand that because I don't think my wife would probably enjoy it much either. The director, Yvonne McKay, she went on later on to, you know, direct that other Christmas movie that I was telling you about with the little girl, Lucy McGrath. She's quoted as saying, if one can be brave as a child and master the monsters, then it's giving children credit for having self-determination. They like the challenge. Monsters are the biggest, scariest things for a child, and they relate to being able to be in control of something bigger than their pet. So I thought that was kind of neat, and it put another spin on it that I hadn't thought of when I actually watched, you know,
right,
the special.
Right.
Like, so there is like a deeper meaning that, you know, is just was there, you know, she really was focusing on that whole aspect of if kind of mastering your fear, which makes sense. I mean, I can see it now looking back on it, but you know, really as I was watching it, I was mostly just thinking, man, this girl's pretty brave.
Yeah.
but no,
I was like, I don't know if I could have been that brave.
No, I wouldn't have been, especially not as a kid. I would have been like, no, I don't think so. Dave Fraser was the composer, and I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with anything else that he's done, but I liked his like electronic music. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like Brad Fiedel's score to The Terminator. Not so much the rhythmic aspects, but just, you know, the timbre that you mentioned earlier, the sound quality.
I can get that, yeah.
You know, it has that very, it's a high-pitched, almost sine tone, you know, sine wave kind of feel to it. And I thought it was pretty good job there.
I need to come out with a soundtrack for that.
Well, I think before they even, and I agree, I think it'd be pretty cool to have, honestly, but before they do that, they probably should get like a nice remastered version of it.
That would be nice.
Know, I think first, because the version I saw, and I'll be honest, I might have just watched it off YouTube. It wasn't very clear. It was kind of grainy. And I think if I could see, especially that the nasty very well, if I could see, but all the monsters, you know, I think it would resonate with a lot more people, you know, if they were just a little bit clearer.
Right. But I don't think they need to update it. I don't think we need a remake. I think it needs to stay how it is.
Yep, I agree. It's
just,
I think
it's a clearer version.
Because if they were to do a remake, I mean, you know, it would be a lot, you know, maybe the budget would be better. They'd be able to do more. Even if it was like crummy CGI, they'd probably be able to do more with it. But I think there's something, especially from this era, and this is why I like this era, because everything was practical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot more imagination going into it, because you really have to think about what you're doing in order to get those right. practical effects to work.
Yep, yep.
And so I think, you know, yeah, it's just a guy in a suit, but still, I mean, they had the guy walking backwards, you know, the suit was on mm-hmm. the other way. So, I mean, it's like they had to use their imagination to make him move and look more insect-like, where, right. you know, nowadays they would just create a CG, you know, a completely mm-hmm. computer-generated, you know, bug monster.
So. Right. Yeah, yeah.
The composer, by the way, Dave Fraser, he actually in 2001 is quoted as saying, "I don't take myself seriously, but I take my music very seriously." Ah. So I thought that was kind of neat. That means everything he did here was very deliberate. I just did. I was talking about Bruce Broughton the other day, and I know he was very famous for having to really transform one of his works like last minute, because it was something that the director completely disliked, and rather than the director having to, you know, firing him and hiring someone else, he said, no, this is your mistake, you fix it. And so he's known very much for, you know, being able to take something very last minute, you know, or something that someone doesn't like and being able to change it. And so I mean, to kind of see this, you know, very deliberate stance that Dave Fraser took. I mean, it's something that you don't normally see in composition. So I enjoyed that. And I thought that was something that was kind of cool, honestly.
I might have to look him up and see how he's grown since 1981.
Yeah, same here. I'm interested to see what he's, you know, what else he's done. Because yeah. it doesn't look like it's very much, but in the 70s and 80s, it seems like, especially in New Zealand, he was, you know, not big, but, you know, relatively known then. So
he was the guy to go to, huh?
Well, I don't know. But so the writer, Burton Silver, he's the guy that wrote this. He's actually known for a comic strip called Bogor, which I've never heard of.
Me neither.
But there was also a best-selling book called Why Paint Cats?
Ooh.
So another one I've never heard of, but now I kind of want to go see if it's as, just to see if it's as imaginative as this one is.
Right.
But I thought it was kind of cool. Huh. I did notice that the book that she's reading, you know, the story of it, essentially, it says on the cover of it by Burton Silver. So it's,
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I thought that was a kind of a cool touch.
Right.
Huh. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, this is a crazy special, but I'm glad I watched it. And I think for me, I don't know if it'll be part of my Christmas canon, but mm-hmm. I think I'll definitely watch it again for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe not every Christmas, but I think I'll definitely bust it out and just kind of, yeah. I mean, it's quirky, but it's cute.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's one of those that, you know, I won't necessarily watch it every Christmas, but sometime during the year I will watch it just because it's got good feels to it, you know.
It does, yeah. I'm telling you, when they're all singing Silent Night and they invite the witch, mm-hmm. there's it's just something about it. And then yep. just the fact that the little girl is brave, and I've said brave a million times, I probably should say something else, but you know, just the fact that she's she does have a persona, but there's something about her, you know, she's got like charisma, mm-hmm. I suppose, for a little girl.
Yeah.
And she is just a cute little girl, and she acts pretty decently for, you know, especially yeah. in 1981 when mm-hmm. you know, most child stars, I mean, they weren't the best actors at all. So.
Well, she's for the first half of the show, the only speaking
role. Yeah. So she really carries, it. Until yeah. the very end. So mm-hmm. Again, there's something to be said for that. But now I have to ask, what would you say, and it might just be something in general or specific if you can think of it, but what would you say is your happiest moment with the special or memory or, you know, moment or anything like that?
Well, like I said earlier, I think my happiest moment is remembering watching it on HBO with my brother and sister and just enjoying the time of the season.
Nice. I dig that. And, you know, there is something about watching it, especially when your family, just watching something and being able to enjoy it all together. Mm-hmm. And it's nice and cozy. And you always try, I mean, at least for me, even as an adult, I try to recreate that coziness with my own family. And I know the kids all like gathering together and, you know, just sitting and watching a movie or a show or something. And so there is something to that, especially, you know, when you're with your family, just enjoying a special that really does bring like the warmth and that cozy fuzziness, you know, everything about it. So, yeah, I totally get that. For me, because it wasn't a part of my, I didn't even know this existed until you brought it up to me. So for me, it was I don't really have a memory. So I'll say my happiest moment would be that end scene, you know, where she's there, you know, opening her presents and the monsters all just kind of like, we love you, we're here. Yep. And it reminded me actually of Labyrinth when, you know, at the end, and, you know, she's kind of like asking, and they all kind of appear one by one. They're like, if you need us, you know, it kind of gave me that feel to it. So, and that's one of my favorite movies growing up. So again, it brought that warm feeling for me. So I enjoyed that part. And of course the singing Silent Night, but, But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment that I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the of the show. And then we'll let the listeners kind of vote and see who did it better. Winner gets a totally rad Christmas sticker, and the loser, unless of course I win, but the loser gets nothing. So just set up, as a guest, I'll let you go first. Just kind of set up the scene for us. And
okay, so my cringeworthy moment was when it was after the witch found the little girl, and she was going to put her to work. And the little girl starts crying, and the witch goes, tears are for later. Now is for work.
Oh man, that witch was something else. She's also one of mine, and it's not that it's a bad line, but something about it just kind of, I don't know, just made me, I think maybe it was her tone, but it's when the nasty returns the wand to her, and it's before she notices it's broken, and she goes, oh, you clever nasty, you found the wand. I just thought that was odd. You clever nasty.
Yeah.
And that was before I realized that his name was Nasty, or he was credited as Nasty. I mean, I don't know if that's his race or if that's his name or what.
But, yeah. Maybe he just smells.
Or maybe that's the smell. Oh, man. but now I'll toss it to you listeners, and you can decide who's going to get a sticker and who's going to get nothing. But in the meantime, I think we're going to say, because G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle, what would you say the other half is?
I would say, don't let a witch with a weird hairdo steal your voice, or you won't be able to sing at Christmas, and you'll have to have a wee child fight your battle for you.
That's, you know what? That's good advice. Yep. That's better than mine. Mine was, if knowing is half the battle, the other half is believing that everything you read is true.
That's, yeah.
So Matt, it's been a blast talking with you. I'm so glad you introduced this to me, and it's been a lot of fun. So I have to wonder, what do you want to plug?
Well, I'm the co-host of the 80 to 89 podcast. We talk about things in the 80s. We talk about the movies that were out. We do a little singing of the music that was the top five. We talk about the news of the day, and it's a good time. You can find us at Zurbinatorland. Mm-hmm. And we're actually getting ready to start a video podcast.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be interesting.
What do you call a video? Would that be a vidcast or a videocast? Maybe. I don't know.
But it's going to be in both formats. So there'll be a video to it, but you can listen to it on wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Right on, right on. Is that going to be on YouTube or?
Yeah, it'll be on YouTube.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah, make sure you check it out. I really enjoyed Zurbinator Land and I mean, it's cool. It's really neat. And I know he has, your co-host has a bunch of other podcasts as well.
Kevin does a lot and he does his own music too. He's amazing. I was lucky enough to, I befriended him a few years ago just by listening to one of his podcasts and yeah, he's a good guy.
Right on. Yeah. Well, it's been great, Matt. And, I mean, I gotta say that if you have a magic wand, you know, go save some monsters' voices, I guess.
That's right. Well, thanks for having me, Jerry. I had a great time.
Well, thank you for coming on. And I'm going to end it by saying hullabaloo, hullabaloo, hullabaloo. And check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like going on a monster quest, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.